Captain's log, Stardate 4937-3.2. A specially outfitted warp-capable shuttlecraft piloted by Tom Paris successfully reached warp 10, breaking the trans-warp barrier. But the side effects of the trip may have cost us our best helmsman. Hailing frequencies are open as always. Welcome back, Trekkies and podcast fans, to another series of the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast. I am your usual host, Captain Mike Wilson, beloved radioactive mutant, and I am introducing this series because this is the first episode. In this particular run, it's a little bit shorter, first of all, but we're going to be looking at episodes that are, shall we say, controversial, unloved, not particularly well received.
Right.
Yeah, I was trying to be diplomatic about it. So we're going to be kicking this off with a Voyager episode. But before I get into that, let me introduce who is here with us. First of all, I'm joined by my faithful number one. Hopefully he can learn how to sit in a chair properly. Welcome back, DK.
Akuchi Moya.
Oh yes, Voyager, of course. Yes. Tattoo on the face, that's the guy. How are you doing, man?
I'm not too bad, dude. Yourself?
Frazzled, as you will probably guess. So apologies, we're a little bit late recording, viewer and listener. So if we're a little bit out of it for a while, that's why I've had to run to catch up, but hopefully we're gonna be okay. So myself and Dicky are here, and we are joined by a returning guest, someone who's very familiar with Star Trek, and you'll have heard her before on these episodes. Please welcome back Lady Vian. Welcome.
Guest, I think you mean returning champ.
Well, yeah. we always fight a losing battle if we're trying to argue with you, but we'll see what everybody makes of the episode this week.
Okay.
So this should be interesting, to say the least. So yeah, if you haven't guessed from, you know, looking at it on the screen or all of the various publicity we've been giving it, this episode we're going to be looking at the Voyager episode Threshold. That will be our big review. So yes, Warp 10, Salamanders, all that great stuff. But if you are new to the podcast, you will not know this. If you aren't, you will. We don't just start off with, jumping straight into the review. We always start with a little bit of, just information. We don't really have time or the reason to get into Hailing Frequencies Open this week because there's not really a lot to say, and we've kind of examined most of the things that we'd do. But I will go around very quickly and ask, and I'll start with you, Vian. Do you have any particular most hated, not favorite episodes of Star Trek that you feel comfortable sharing with us?
Yeah, if we're talking about shit episodes, I don't know why we're reviewing Threshold when the Chakotay boxing episode is right there.
Ding, 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 ding.
DK would not let me review that. He would, that wouldn't be a podcast because he refuses. He will have nothing to do with it. So.
Yeah. Or Warlord. Warlord's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And that's just Voyager. I mean, we get into some early TNG and early Deep Space Nine.
There is
just a wealth of garbage to choose from. So
yeah, I mean, Code of Honor is pretty much an easy target, the most racist Trek episode ever. But okay, that's fair enough. I think those are all answers that nobody can really hold against you. So how about you, DK? And you can't say the fight because we all know
that's it. Everything else is pure gold compared to that. The only one I can think of is it Profit and Lace?
That's
pretty garbage, but everything.
That has good moments. I'm not saying that's a good episode, but there are pluses to that episode. There are some redeeming qualities to Profit and Lace. But yeah. not a lot, but more so than other episodes. Oh,
God, yeah, yeah. Just everything, even Alternative Factor, I would rather watch that than that boxing episode again.
I just don't understand your vitriol for it. I don't like it, but it's like the sheer level of hatred you have for it is almost amusing.
It's like, oh my God, it's like just visual tranquilizer.
I have an episode that I feel that way about, but I'm not going to say what it is because it's we're reviewing it in a few weeks and I've actually put it on the list, so I will have to force myself to watch it and see if I give it the 0 out of 5 that I feel want to
do. What series?
It.
What series at least, Mike?
It's Next Gen.
Okay. I know what it is.
Yeah, clearly made no secret of
it. The spider in me knows.
Okay, got it.
That's fair enough. I mean, I don't want to share much more about my least favorite. I'm not hugely, I don't really make a secret of the things I dislike, but I don't think there's anything I truly hate. I think most episodes have something going for them. But again, I've made no secret of my lack of love for the first couple of seasons of Picard, and I still kind of stand by that. Although I must give them a rewatch just to see if they don't really hold up as much. I mean, there's moments, but I just, that was disappointing.
There's no moments. I watched all of season one, and I hated every second of it.
there was a couple of moments I enjoyed, I'll be honest, but only a couple. That's other than that, I don't really think. I mean the obvious. Although I'm currently engaged in a debate on Threads, i.e. the social media site that's not a hellscape, with people that are saying somebody posted the statement, "I think you can skip the first two seasons of Next Gen," and I was like, "Ha, beg to differ. Here are just some of the things you would miss if you did that." So even though I know they're not great, I don't think you could necessarily just skip everything. How would you guys, just may as well chime in on this. What do you guys think about that? Do you think there's anything redeemable in those first two seasons?
Definitely. Definitely.
Shades of Grey. Let's just watch Shades of Grey.
Shades of Grey. That was the one I kind of put down and was like, universally, I think everybody would agree that has to go, because we were trying to make lists of like, well, what would you put? What would you cut out? And from season one, I think we all pretty much agreed to lose about 9 episodes. From season two, there was about 4. And I was like, to be fair, one of those is a clip show. And I think the guy I was chatting to was like, Shades of Grey is a masterpiece, said no one ever. Exactly. It's just, they ran out of budget and there was a strike. So what can you do?
Well, here's the thing about later seasons of Next Gen and Deep Space Nine is you can't get to them without slogging through the bad stuff. You just have to work your way through it.
Yeah, it's so weird though, because you get the occasional gem like season one of DS9. I don't particularly like, but then you get episodes like Duet, which are just like fantastic, like a gem in this pile of poop. And it's the same with Next Gen. I mean, season one and two are rough, but then you've got like Measure of a Man in there, like one of the best episodes of the show. Like, where'd this come from? Jeez. I can say that because we've reviewed that one, so go check out that review. Right, I'll move us along then to the very next part, which will be, you'll be used to this, it's the thing that gives the podcast its name. It is the hit or miss section.
What about my performance? I'm not a drama critic.
That's right, we're still going to be doing this. Did you both come expecting this? Did you come prepared, or were you thinking we'd forget about it?
That's my favorite part.
I'd actually forgotten about it until you started and mentioned the name of the podcast, and I thought, oh, shit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's something we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
I always tend to do this.
I've got Google ready just for my memory lapses.
Don't worry, I've got the pictures ready to share. If you're watching on YouTube, they'll hopefully come up, or I'll have edited them in if they are unsuitable. I've got 5 things. And if you are new here, I always go over it. It's just literally I name something from anywhere in the Trek universe, ask if it's a hit or a miss. We debate back and forth, try and come to a consensus. It never gets too heated. It's just a little bit of fun. And since I'm doing these themed series, I always try to throw in at least a couple from the theme. So there might be a couple of things related to either the episode we're looking at or, unpopular episodes that pop up. Don't be surprised if that happens. And so, we are going to start, as will surprise nobody, with a ship, because it's me, as I always say. And it is related to this episode. I felt like I had to ask this. Hit or miss for the Type 9 shuttle, aka the shuttle Cochrane that we see in this episode. Vian, you're the guest, so I'll come to you first. Hit or miss for this one?
Miss. That's a bad design. It's ugly as hell. It looks like a garden spade.
Vian, how could you? You're not a fan of it. You think it looks like a garden spade. That's a pretty succinct way of putting it, I suppose. Okay. Anything you want to add to that?
No. Well, that about sums it up for me.
Yeah, there's no real need. I think that says it all. EK, I was asking you, what are your thoughts on the show?
I don't mind it. I kind of like it, but it's the lights on the back of the seat that blink that does it for me. So I'll just say yeah, because I like blinking lights.
Oh, sometimes it's the simple things, isn't it?
But, it is. Yeah. But enough about
it. I'm really surprised that Vian's hatred, because I really like this design. I don't know why. There's something about it that's just appealing. And I know that Rick Everson, who's been on this podcast a few times, is a huge fan of this, the Type 9 shuttle specifically as well. He's been trying to get the Eagle Moss model that I'm lucky enough to have. But yeah, I don't know. I like it. I think if I had a single complaint, it would be that I don't love the way it kind of caves in at the back and it looks like there's empty space, but I can live with it. And yeah, it looks, it kind of suits this episode that we're going to look at, because it has the kind of streamlined going fast thing, I think, going on for it. And the, you know, the stereotypical lover of fast things and hot rods and stuff in me is fond of it, maybe.
So. I'm sorry, mate. So, it's just the way you said how you like, God, the hot rods in me. I'm sorry. I've been watching too many Carry On movies recently.
Clearly. That would be a Klingon pain stick ritual I would not fancy doing. But yeah, fair enough. Well, so that's two hits and a miss. So unfortunately, Vian, you are outvoted on this one. Oh, controversial. So yeah, well, we'll call that a hit then, and we'll move on to the second thing. If I can find a nice image. I don't know why, because you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So the second thing is an episode. It feeds into our less than popular series. It's from the original series. It's infamous. I had to do it. Hit or miss for the episode, Spock's brain. Vian, over to you.
I think it's too much of a classic to call it a miss. Like, infamous. Infamous, right? And there's something fun about that. Is it one that I would go back and watch over? No, but I mean, you can't not watch it. I mean, God, look at D in this picture you've chosen. Like, how can you not just be tickled by that?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I'm not sure what to make of that. You're saying it's a hit, but you also would never want to watch it. So.
No, I'm saying it's neither a hit nor a miss, but required viewing if you want to, be involved in this space at all.
It's something I'd probably say you have to see once just to say you've seen it. Maybe, but yeah. Okay, we'll call that a very soft hit maybe on your behalf then. And
it's a hit, but for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Hit for comedy value maybe, but DK, is this better or worse than the alternative fact?
brain, what is brain? I like it. It's camp. It's completely stupid, and it's like, I don't know. It's almost like if Star Trek crossed over with the Adam West Batman, and for that.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, it got that vibe to it, and for that alone, at least it's entertaining.
You people have disappointed me. It's a miss for me. I hate this episode with a passion. I always, you'll probably hear this a lot coming up, but I just hate when Star Trek abandons its idea of having to have some footing in real science, and just this whole idea of like, his brain's been removed, so we'll remote control his brainless body and it'll be fine. And then just no.
Dude, that's nonsense. Happening now. Look at Elon Musk.
But yeah, I mean, for me, it's not for me. It's too ridiculous. It's everything that people kind of criticize. And I don't know. I hate the plot of it. I hate the guest stars. I hate the general idea. And I don't know. I kind of see what you're coming from, that maybe everyone should watch it once just to see. But I mean, there's an entire book, like a Star Trek episode guide, that awards every series the Spock's Brain Award for its worst episode because it's just regarded as, you know, famously the worst. But hey-ho, if you guys like it, you do. There's not much I can say about that because, unfortunately, I'm outvoted. So with 2-1, we're calling Spock's Brain a hit on this podcast, apparently. We've officially crossed into Bizarro World territory.
I need to go get my black goatee and we'll be all set.
Oh no, we're in the mirror universe. Mm-hmm. Black goatee, you couldn't have dressed like the intendant or something cool like that, you know?
I dress like that already.
Okay, well, shouldn't be surprised. Okay. The third thing on the list is a character. It's a character that I think I've mentioned before, but they've been through some significant events since. So hit or miss for Captain 7 of 9. Vian, over to you.
Okay, it's a miss and here's why. Okay, first of all, haven't Shocked. Watched that season. I haven't gotten that far.
Season 2 now, is worse, course, to be fair.
I tried. I got about 15 minutes into season 2 and said, I'm out. So, in fairness, I haven't watched the arc of how this happens yet. But this is something that Star Trek does that irritates me to no end, whether we're talking about the Alpha canon or the Beta canon, the books, whatever. Anybody who was a series regular, up to and including Ezri Dax, becomes a captain somewhere down the line. And I'm sorry, that's not how this kind of structure works. Not everybody needs to be a captain. Not everybody should be a captain. And just going on what I have seen of Seven, first in Voyager, of course, and in season 1 of Picard, Seven is not a captain. She's just not. No. Sorry. I'm not here for it. No.
Okay. So it's missed, but in fairness, you're not informed enough on the arc to say, you know, to judge it because you haven't watched it.
Right. Right. But it's this thing that we do where it's like everybody. It's like we have to have some other officers. Everybody becomes an admiral. Everybody becomes a captain. It's like, it's just not reality. And it bothers me to no end.
I mean, at least Seven gets a journey. She doesn't just go from, I'm not in Starfleet to here's your 4 pips, you know? So, but again, I'll give my thoughts on that in a second. Because over to you, DK. I know you've seen season 3 of Picard, so you probably are more informed on this one.
I don't mind it. I'm not really swayed one way or the other, to be honest. Like Vian says, not everybody needs to be a captain, not everybody needs to, and you know, I did like you know, when we spoke to Mac and the way that Seven was being treated in that by Starfleet, because I could actually see that happening. This, yeah. I can't quite see it, but it's not to a point where I oppose it. It's going to be a tentative hit. Just slightly over the line, though. Just slightly over the line.
I like this, and I'm surprised I do, because I was never the biggest fan of Seven as a character. And I didn't like her particularly when she was a Fenris Ranger, but I think season 3 of Picard, as much as I have issues with some of it, really did kind of stick the landing with her arc. I thought it made a lot of sense, and whether it be through her relationship with Shaw and the way that developed, or the fact that we see her as kind of a first officer and learning from, you know, Picard and Riker and so on and so forth. And it's just, I don't know, there's something really cool when you go back and watch Voyager now and you just think, oh, she's going to end up as the captain of the Enterprise. You know, that's such huge growth. Spoiler alert, I guess. Sorry, Vian, I did not mean to do that. But
to be honest, she could end up a homeless drunk in Picard and it would still be better than being with Chakotay.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, hey, quick question. Did they ever address that at any point?
Nope.
Like, did they?
No.
Wow.
No, I like Captain 7 of 9, and like I said, I'm quite surprised about that, because if you asked me if, you know, before season 3 of Picard, if I'd have liked the idea, I'd have been really against it. So maybe you'll feel the same, Vian. I would not necessarily put money on that, but if you ever do get around to watching it, you may kind of be warmed to it like I was, but we'll see. Not sure where we fell on that. So, oh yeah, actually, you gave it just a slight hit, DK. So I'm claiming the victory
on
that.
I'm kind of on the fence, but I would like to see a series.
Yeah, I'm not fussed personally, and I really resent everyone that's like, we don't want Starfleet Academy, we want this. Like, personally, I'd rather watch Starfleet Academy myself, but whatever. Anyway, so the fourth thing out of five, we're getting there, I promise, is another ship, which is, again, relevant. And I can't remember if we have ever done this. It seems like if we haven't, it would be a huge oversight. So hit or miss for the USS Voyager. Vianne, over to you.
That is a solid 10. 10 out of 10. I mean, look at her. Look at her. That is the prettiest ship Starfleet has ever made. Cannot say enough good things. She is absolutely, without question, my favorite ship.
How come you don't think that looks like a garden spade?
Look at the nacelles, Mike. Look at the happy face. Look at the happy face of the deflector with the two little eyes and that big smile.
I've never seen that. I'm not going to be able to unsee that.
Exactly.
It's the USS Party Bus, Mike. It's the USS Party Bus. And I love her.
They should definitely have illuminated that in green when they did the Borg upgrades to the ship, just to make it even more obvious. Oh, I really can't not see it.
No, it's just glaring at me now.
She's so happy. It's so happy. It's such a cheerful design.
The fact that I'm looking at that as well, when the next time it goes to warp, when the nacelles rise and you can kind of just look at the nacelle, the deflector go like, yay! Whee! So fun. Anyway, So yeah, USS Party Bus. I should clarify, if anybody's not watching on YouTube, I'm referring to the original Voyager, not the Voyager A, B, or J, as they do exist. So yeah, we'll talk about those another time, I'm sure. DK, what about you? How do you feel about the OG Voyager?
I like it. I prefer the top-down view. I think it looks more sleek from the upper view. But yeah, I like it. It's not my favorite Federation ship, you know, my favorite Federation ship, but I do like this one. Yeah, and I love the repositioning details. So
yeah, I kind of wish they'd made more of that, because it doesn't seem like they get a lot of play. I mean, I know it happens in the opening credits every episode technically, but yeah, I just feel like we didn't get to see enough of that cool thing. And there's some beta cannon somewhere that, like, that's to avoid the supposed damage to subspace that warp caused in Next Generation, that they just immediately hand-waved away because we'd be effed, basically, if that was the case. So they were like, yeah, the variable geometry nacelles negate the damage. Don't worry about it. And again, it would have been nice to get into that a little bit. So, but anyway, no, I'm just going to be boring. I love the Voyager. I love the Intrepid class. I love all four of the current Voyagers in actual fact, because they're all basically the same overall shape and design. And yeah, the Voyager in particular, I always loved the show when I was younger. It was my comfort show, and I had various models of the ship. It's one of the few ships I actually built a model in, the old, like, you'll know what I'm talking about, DK, the old, like, Airfix kit type ones.
Oh, where you've
You've got to basically snap together bits of plastic, glue them.
Why do you think I don't know what that is? Of course I know what that is.
I wasn't sure if it was like something that was just a UK thing. I wasn't sure if it had like made it to the US, because I thought it felt like a brand name or something, maybe.
I do have a question for you, Mike. Are you like Tom Paris and you call her the Voyager and not just Voyager? Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't know. I've never thought about it, actually. Yeah, probably the Voyager, yeah, maybe.
Oh my God, I can't even with you. I just...
Yeah, I think we can safely say the Voyager or Voyager is an overall hit. We all three of us said that. Apologies, it looks like this image is going to be really tiny on the screen. But this is an episode of Deep Space Nine that I'm throwing up here. Hit or miss for the season five episode, The Assignment. Vianne, again, you're the guest. We'll come to you first.
Is that the O'Brien one where he has to go and infiltrate the Orion Syndicate?
No, this is the one where it's the first appearance of the Par Wraiths, and one of them possesses Keiko.
Oh, yeah. No. First of all, unpopular opinion here, most O'Brien episodes I skip. Ooh. He is not my favorite character. Now, I don't hate him as much as I hate other characters, but O'Brien is not where it's at for me. This episode is absolutely terrible and ridiculous. No.
And dumb.
And dumb. This is a big ol' miss.
Okay, fair enough. What about you, DK?
I don't remember much of it, and I'm taking that as a good sign. So it's probably going to be a miss from me.
Okay, fair enough. It's a miss from me, as I kind of alluded to very heavily. I just think it's really... I'm not a huge fan of the power rates anyway, but I came to be because they were used better in literally every other appearance. But I don't know how they got more appearances based on this, because it just comes across as so stupid. There's a couple of nice, sinister moments in it where it almost, like... It almost comes together to work, like when the possessed Keiko is trying to... She's with Molly, and she's kind of giving O'Brien some kind of task, and then, you know, Molly thinks it's still just her mom, and she's actually not, and she's kind of brushing her hair a bit too heavily to kind of insinuate to O'Brien, like, I'm going to hurt your daughter if you don't do this. But that just makes it all the more stupid that he was like, oh, well, I'll leave you with her then while I go and reconfigure the, I don't know, whatever it was. I was going to say deflector, but it's a station. So reconfigure something on the station to try and close the wormhole, which was the assignment in question. Yeah, it's just, it's terrible. It's really bad. Not a fan. So weirdly enough, that's going to be another where we're all in agreement. On the more negative side, apologies if you're a fan of that episode. You can potentially try and sell me on it in the comments or on social media, but yeah, I don't love it. So yeah, with that out of the way, we hit the bulk of the episode then, which is our episode review. And as I've made very clear, today we're looking at the episode Threshold, the infamous episode where Tom Paris breaks the Warp 10 barrier. I'm sure if you're a Trek fan, you know it. Yeah, it's kind of infamous. I believe it won the Spock's Brain Award for Voyager. Yes, it beat The Fight and Warlord and the various other things we've been referring to, I think. Don't quote me on that, though. So, we are going to jump in. Oh, gosh. Vian, did you just... start turning a tap on or something there?
No, I got my headphones disconnected and I had to turn them back on.
Okay, fair enough. We'll get into the behind the scenes stuff and everything and then start breaking down the episode as we always do. Don't worry, you'll be able to follow along with us if you are new here, but we've been doing this for a while now. But you'll remember, if you were with us last season for our Romulan episodes, that there's something else we've been doing, or I've been doing, an idea that was inspired by, ripped off by, from, I should say, the Delta Flyers podcast, where I do a little bit of poetry for the episodes in question. Now, just because they're episodes that I may not like doesn't mean that I'm going to let myself off the hook with this one. So I will say I have come up with a limerick and a haiku to describe Threshold, or the plot of the episode. So I'm going to do what I always do, and I'm going to come to both of you and ask which one you want to hear first. You can hear one now and one at the end of the review.
I want to hear the haiku.
I agree. Haiku,
okay. Okay, the haiku is very simple and to the point. So if you dim the lights and we'll pretend we're in some kind of beatnik coffee bar. Here goes. Paris hits warp 10. His excitement is short-lived. Now he's a lizard. There we go.
Point of contention, not a lizard. Okay. Clearly an amphibian.
I know, but it's just funnier that way. Also, I had to fit it into five syllables. Now he's an amphibian would have just knocked me way out, as would now he's a salamander. He's lizard-like. Lizard adjacent. So yeah, I'll give you the limerick maybe a little bit later towards the end. But until then, we are going to jump into the behind the scenes section. I do believe, DK, you've got most of this, but I may have something to start us off if you just bear with me. Yeah. Before we start, I will say that this isn't just coming from me, that this episode is unloved or unpopular, in case there does happen to be anyone who's overly fond of it. I did take the quote from Wikipedia. This episode is widely regarded by fans and critics as one of the worst episodes of Voyager and of the entire Star Trek franchise. So don't pin it on me.
No, Wikipedia. Yeah. I have thoughts already.
Oh, do you want to share them with us before we get the BTS? Or,
well, yes, actually, let me just say, I think this is a very strong case of bandwagoning, where a bandwagoning, where one person's like, oh, it's the worst thing they ever made, and everybody's like, hey, yeah, that's right. And then it becomes a meme, and then it becomes a joke, and then it becomes a holiday, and we all kind of ironically, you know, laugh about it. But fact is, this is not even close to the worst episode of Star Trek. It's not even the worst episode of Voyager. So why it gets the amount of disrespect that it does, I'm not sure.
Interesting. So we'll have a good discussion then, because I think...
just a wee support, Mike. I'm sorry.
What? I'm drying here, Danny.
Interesting. As if it was, that's complete bollocks.
I still want to be friends with her. That was the subtext.
I don't want to offend her. She'll not come back on. Jeez. Yeah. We'll have differing points of view, perhaps, as we go through the review. Let's just leave it at that for now. There's things... I'm going to do it later. There's things I like in here, but I can absolutely see that why it got its reputation, and I do think it's entirely justified, personally. But yeah, we can debate that later. For right now, as I said, we've got a behind-the-scenes section. DK, that's usually your peer view, so with apologies for the extra things I may have chucked in, go for it. Would you like to read out our behind-the-scenes on this episode and trivia?
Yes, I shall make a start on this encyclopedia. the mutated Tom Paris was made into an action figure with his three offspring as accessories, and I really want that now.
Somebody gave Robbie McNeil one at a convention. He mentioned on, because I listened to the Delta Flyers episode on Threshold just for curiosity's sake, and he mentioned, yeah, it's kind of weird. There's the sort of part mutated Paris and then three little tiny salamander babies.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on eBay after this. The writing staff was dissatisfied with the quality of the episode, to the point that Brannon Braga later called it a royal steaming stinker on the commentary for the DVD release.
Did you hear that, Vian? Brannon doesn't agree with you that it's not a stinker.
Let's not get me started on my thoughts about Brannon Braga.
Yeah, I will say his name comes up a lot during this series of not particularly great episodes. He would know about stinkers.
Jerry Taylor commented that the fans were appalled at the episode, mainly centered on the implausible idea that the two stars were turned into salamanders. It is not one that took with the audience. The fact that we were turning people into salamanders was offensive to a lot of people and just stupid to others. I mean, the latter group. After Robert Duncan McNeil read the script initially, he had trouble understanding it. He later referred to it as bizarre. Live long and evolve. What Star Trek can teach us about genetics, evolution, and life on other worlds by Muhammad A. F. Noor discusses how such extreme mutation is more likely to result in cancers or death than transmutation. The genetic mutations were too repeatable and the speed of change was remarkably fast. The book suggests that some of these problems may be allayed very slightly if the changes were epigenetic rather than genetic, but the premise is an extreme stretch in the biology either way. Speaking to technology journalist Becca Caddy for a Science of Star Trek column, Dr. Charles Foster, bioinformatics research associate in the Virology Research Lab at the University of New South Wales and Prince of Wales Hospital, and I've now suddenly realised why you're getting all this to read, Mike, observed, if strong external pressures are applied to a population or experienced by a population, one would expect there to be sped up evolution. Caddy concluded, who's to say space newts don't have some inconceivable advanced consciousness beyond our wildest dreams? And who knows how we'd evolve if we're all simultaneously at all points in space? Talk about external pressure. I hate you, Mike. This episode marks the first appearance of the Class 2 shuttle on the series, namely the Cochrane, after Zefram Cochrane, the first human to break the warp threshold. This Cochrane followed in its namesake's footsteps by being the first human vessel to break the transwarp threshold. According to the Star Trek The Next Generation Technical Manual, page 55, Q and other omnipotent beings have fun in the 9.9999 plus warp factor range. The book also states, oh, "My, you're just taking the piss now, dude." That the traveler uses warp 9.9999999996 in Next Generation, where no one has gone before. Seriously, the next time you ask me if I'm going to read something out, I'm just going to send you a GIF of somebody flipping you the bird.
I completely forgot about this, but I just thought that was interesting because they're trying to make out like, oh, the Enterprise went so fast it was crossing dimensions, and it's like, well, it was 9.9999996.
I do love the extreme headcanon people are going to make this palatable.
Yeah, to make it make sense.
In 2018, an anonymous contributor submitted a fake science paper entitled Rapid Genetic and Developmental Morphological Change Following Extreme Celerity under the name Lewis Zimmerman, describing Paris's experiment. In other words, to several predatory science journals, four accepted it and one published. Seriously? One published it. The events of this episode were briefly referenced in the Star Trek Lower Decks episode, We'll Always Have Tom Paris, when Beckett Mariner asks if Paris is still a salamander. Brad Boimler defines what happened to Paris as a celerity-induced accelerated somatic mutation rate. And finally, thank Christ, the episode proved to be highly unpopular among viewers. Shortly after the installment first aired, Jerry Taylor remarked, "We're taking a lot of flack for that. There's been a real lashing out. I recognize that people who are on the internet and who write us letters are a tiny portion of our audience. But when it's as overwhelming as it was on this episode, you begin to take notice."
If only they would at some other things and times, but never mind. So, yeah, thank you for reading that, DK. I do apologize. I genuinely did forget how wordy it was and, you know, all of the bits and pieces. But I think it's interesting. Is there anything there that piqued your interest or that you'd like to debate back and forth, Vian?
Yeah, shout out to my friend who wrote that paper. I won't name names, but I know who it was. And I think that's awesome that they did that and got it published. I mean, how fun is that? Yeah, well, I guess I can wait till we get into the writing and the acting to really say my thoughts.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, okay, so I mean, hopefully there's been something of interest to you there, audience, with the behind the scenes. I thought it was kind of intriguing, back and forth. Like I said, it kind of proves that even if you're a fan of the episode, it did get a negative reception, and as DK said, it's kind of funny, the headcanon that that some nerds, and I say that because I'm one of them, came up with to try and justify this clearly, you know, just pulled out of their arse writing idea of warp 10 means you're everywhere all at the same time. So yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a logical leap, but it's one of those things, you know, Trek has retconned things in the past and probably will again. But anyway, regardless, we are going to jump into the writing. And before I go through the intense amount of stuff that I have to read out on this, I'm just going to throw open to a little bit of discussion first and ask, is there anything that stands out in the writing that you particularly wanted to bring up before we get into it? Either one of you?
Yes. I think some of the dialogue, yeah, I mean, the writing and the premise is ridiculous. And we all know that's not how evolution works, yada, yada, yada. But I think the writing for the characters themselves and the dialogue is quite nice, particularly the scene where Tom is dying, essentially, and he's talking about his childhood. He's talking about losing his virginity, the reference to the pepperoni pizza. Yes, it's kind of funny in a way, but it's also not. It's kind of, you know, he's going through this extreme event and, you know, what comes to you in those moments, right? So I think that's very interesting and kind of well-written and certainly well-performed by Robbie McNeil.
Ah, interesting. We probably will be in agreement with some things because I would say the same. I'll get into it a little bit more later, but I actually agree that I think Paris is written really well in this episode. It's just that the catalyst for that is crap, frankly. It's hanging on something that's a bit too ridiculous for me, but yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think Robbie McNeil does a great job. And when you see some of his influences that I'll talk about, you can kind of see where he's coming from with that. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Paris's emotional arc in the episode is great. It's just that the literal what's happening is nonsense, unfortunately. Yeah. What about you, DK? Is there anything you wanted to bring up about the writing or anything you wanted to debate about what we just said there?
No. I think you've both kind of nailed it. It's there's some good dialogue squeezed into an otherwise laughable episode.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Although I will give a shout out that Paris says he feels like a pepperoni pizza, and about 5 minutes later, it looks like one.
Oh, DK. Anyway, I kind of have some things that I wanted to bring up before, that I kind of have to read this information about before we get into. So I will read the stuff I have on the writing. Hopefully it'll spark some interest or it might be something you haven't heard before. But do feel free to interrupt me and jump in if either of you guys wanted to that are here with us. I'll start by saying that this is something that I kind of noticed, and then I saw somebody else had kind of picked up on it as well, and it's. I know it's a really churlish, nerdy bugbear, but since the Doctor had already developed a way to recover from the hyper-evolution, he does turn Janeway and Paris back, Voyager could have travelled to the Alpha Quadrant, and upon reaching there, the Doctor could have given an antidote to the entire crew, and it's not really made clear why that wasn't explored. I think I've headcanoned it as they didn't have the special magical dilithium. They didn't have enough of it to do that in the end, I guess. I don't know. Any thoughts, guys?
That's a very good point.
Yeah, that never occurred to me.
Yeah, clearly it didn't occur to Bran and Braga or whoever it was that wrote this part of the episode either. But
oh my god,
yeah. I've ruined it now with this logical leap. But anyway, carrying on, the story idea for this episode came from Michael DeLuca, who was at the time the head of New Line Cinema. That either explains a lot or not, depending how much you know about New Line in the 90s, I guess. Tom Paris was used as this episode's central character because Voyager's writing staff believed he'd become underused. I'd say probably at this point in the series, maybe. Jerry Taylor recalled, Gene Roddenberry made the determination at the beginning of Next Gen that Warp 10 would be the limit, so he's the one to blame. And at that point, you'd occupy all portions of the universe simultaneously. Which always seemed like a wonderfully provocative notion. Then the question is, what happens if you do go Warp 10? How does that affect you? So we all sat in a room and kicked it around and came up with this idea of evolution and thought that it would be far more interesting and less expected that instead of being the large-brained, glowing person, it would be full circle back to our origins in the water. Not saying that we've become less than we are because those creatures may experience consciousness on such an advanced plane that we couldn't conceive of it. It just seemed like a more interesting image. Okay. From the earliest response to this episode to the present day, the episode has repeatedly been accused of being scientifically flawed. That's putting it mildly. Robert Duncan McNeil noted some of the fans sort of questioned the science of it. In an interview that Jerry Taylor gave shortly after the episode's first broadcast, she said of the negative initial response, some of this anger was misplaced, I thought. A lot of the ire seemed to be caused by the fact that we stated no one had ever gone Warp 10 before, and people flooded us with letters saying, that's not true. In the original series, they went Warp 12 and Warp 13. We should have had a crawl before the episode explaining all this, but it really was a recalibration of warp speed. Nerds, eh? Brandon Braga later commented, I wrote the episode, or at least the teleplay, and it had some good intentions behind it. It had a good premise breaking the Warp 10 barrier. Disagree. I don't know where this whole de-evolving into a lizard, he did say lizard there, that's not me, came from. Mm-hmm. I think I was trying to make a statement about evolution not necessarily being evolving toward higher organisms, that evolution may also be a de-evolution. In a 2011 interview, Braga stated, I was trying something. It was my homage, I guess, to David Cronenberg's The Fly. In a later interview, he attempted to defend himself. That's not my words again. This is how this information was put to me, saying it's very much a classic Star Trek story, but in the rewrite process, I took out the explanation, the idea behind the ending, that we evolve into these little lizards because maybe evolution is not always progressive. Maybe it's a cycle where we revert to something more rudimentary. That whole conversation was taken out for various reasons, and that was a disaster, because without it, the episode doesn't even have a point. I think it suffered greatly. I got the note that it wasn't necessary, but in fact, it really had a lot to do with what the episode was about. Big mistake taking it out. Reeks of everyone else's fault, mine, but okay. Later, Braga complained, unfortunately, none of that came across in the episode, and all we were left with were some lizard things crawling around in the mud, so it was not my shining moment. In 2011, he named this episode as the one installment of Voyager that he would, quote, just as soon forget, and remarked, That's a real low point. It really backfired on me. It was poorly executed by me. So, and that's all I have on the writing until we get into the actual discussion back and forth. So, do you guys have any thoughts on mainly, I think, Brandon Braga and Jerry Taylor's comments on the writing process there?
I think they're being unnecessarily harsh. I mean, if we look at Star Trek overall, right, from TOS on, there's a lot of, how do I want to say this? There's a spectrum of solid gold to absolute garbage. And I don't think that this episode, well, the premise, yes, again, the premise is ridiculous, but I don't think this episode is truly as terrible as everybody acts like it is. I mean, because all Star Trek has some ridiculous premises, but it's still executed well. It's still well-written. Well, not well-written, excuse me. But as I was saying, the dialogue concept aspect of it is well-written, and it's certainly well-performed, and the makeup is really well done. And, you know, if we turn even just a Voyager and look at something like, say, The Fight, this is not even close to the worst. So I really have a hard time getting my head around the ire for this episode. Like, there's so much about it that I can unapologetically appreciate, while still acknowledging it's not a gold episode. I just think it's not one, like, would I go back and watch it over and over? No, but I also wouldn't skip it. You know, it's good filler. Okay. It's a good filler episode.
Yeah, okay. I think we've kind of already said, at risk of repeating it, I kind of agree with you. It's the character stuff is well written, but the actual, unfortunately, the bulk of the story isn't, and that's what everything kind of hangs on, which is a shame. Because I think I would say I'd be happy to skip the episode if it weren't for the fact that I think it actually is a big moment in Paris's development and growth. It's just a shame the reason for it. And I think there are other reasons that happen later in the series that thankfully give you the same level of growth and kind of character stuff with, you know, with plots that make sense, shall we say. But yeah, I can. So how do you guys feel about this idea that Braga's trying to claim, I shouldn't really phrase it like that, but Braga's claiming that he was, it was his homage to Cronenberg's The Fly. Did you see anything in that? Or?
I did. I kept referring to him as Brundlefly throughout the episode to the person that I was watching it with, because it definitely did give me vibes. When he first reached up and pulled his hair out, I thought the ear was going to come off.
Yeah. I think that... Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, it definitely has that 80s body horror tone at certain points, but I wouldn't give Brandon Braga the credit of saying that was intentional. I think he's a lying douchebag and he's trying to save face.
He's pulling a Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, exactly.
It was intentional. Now, did you listen to the Delta Flyers podcast on this, by the way, DK?
I haven't, no.
No, it's really weird that you said that then, because both Robbie and Garrett Wong, obviously that host that podcast, said the same exact thing, that they thought when Paris reaches to take a clump of hair, they were expecting him to pull away his ear. So it's bizarre that you guys have kind of come to the same thing with that. And there's obviously something in that, you know, that you expected a little bit of a more severe mutation. And I do think if that's the kind of thing that you're looking for, I think some of the early body horror stuff is really effective, but then it just gets the kind of, not the final stage, because where it's all kind of salamandery, but the kind of stage that there's an action figure of, where, you know, Paris has evolved into this smooth-headed thing. For me, it just doesn't work. It's too Star Trek Alien of the Week-like, and it kind of, it removes all of the kind of visceral, ooh, something mutation is happening, and it just looks like, oh, this could be any alien we met on a planet, you know what I mean? Yeah, maybe that's just me. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. There's something a bit too clean and a bit too, this is now what we've evolved into, and it's just a regular, you know, looking-ish thing or whatever. But yeah, I mean, some of the other stuff's very effective. The idea of him, like, pulling out his tongue, and like I said, the way that some of the skin starts to break down and flake, and the miraculously very quickly appearing, like, veins and stuff when he collapses in the mess hall. I will get into this. I think I have it on the acting, so apologies if I end up repeating myself. But I will say that Robbie McNeil said that when he kind of read the script, he looked on it not like The Fly so much, but also with aspects of The Elephant Man. And that's kind of how he played some of those scenes.
The person I was watching it with actually said at one point, I am yucking animal.
Yeah, that's like when the tongues were moved, I kind of like, after I'd read that, I'll say it didn't occur to me until then, but after I'd read like Robbie say that, I was like, oh, I totally see what he means when you're playing it without a tongue and stuff, and you've got to be like, oh, what's happening to me? Yes, absolutely. I can see why he would. That was kind of the research he did. I'm not saying it's anywhere near as good as that film. That film is legendarily brilliant, and this was, you know, a dude transforming into a lizard creature. Yeah, this was not. But I can kind of see where he was coming from. And to his credit, I mean, his acting of the bits and pieces, it's probably the best you could get for the ridiculous notion, maybe, but especially on like a TV show, you know. But
everybody yeah. in this, with the exception of maybe that silly little subplot of Raphael Sabarge talking to redneck Klingons.
Oh, I like that.
No, I hate that bit. But I think everybody in this has a performance that kind of elevates it from just being completely dreadful. Because if they didn't put the effort in, this yeah. would just be a resounding clunker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they give it their best shot. And like I said, there's some great scenes, as I'm sure Vian would agree, in terms of the character stuff and bits and pieces like that. There's also some terrible stuff at the end from characters, but again, I'll get into that a little bit later. It's weird. It's just occurred to me now. Like I was going to say, I like the idea that the kind of Jonas betraying them subplot is a kind of a Trek experiment with long form storytelling that Voyager does in season two. So I always kind of half forget that they did it, and then when I see the bits and pieces and the way it built up to something, I'm like, oh yeah, I really appreciated them doing that. So that even in an episode like this, it's like, ooh, there's still something carrying on in the background there before we get to the episode where it's dealt with. Investigations, I believe, is the episode's title, where it yeah. officially explains everything. And, you know, Paris seems like he's leaving the ship, but it's actually a ploy and blah, blah, blah. Spoilers for that episode, he said, a bit too late. But no, it's just occurred to me there that because obviously it's kind of maybe shoehorned a bit into this episode, that Jonas has to be giving, you know, this is, we've been doing Warp 10 experiments, this is it, to the Kazon. Now it's just occurred to me, is there a bunch of like weirdly mutated salamander Kazons where they were just like, you did not warn us this would happen, Jonas?
Would anyone care?
The Kazon aren't smart enough to make it work.
I agree with you, Vian, but I also really just kind of, yeah, DK, you win this round with, would anybody care? Yes, the Kazon, the one species so terrible, even the Borg were like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, it just feels like, as you say, it feels shoehorned in, but a lot of this, to me, the execution of it, the writing part, just feels like, even though it's got that crap framework, even though that's there, a lot of things just seem half-assed and lazy. Like the pre-credit sequence.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts off and it's you know, you're kind of getting that Star Trek the Motion Picture vibe where, you know, when they're first going into warp and he's doing,
well, 2001, you know, if we want to use a better film as an example, but okay.
Yeah, how dare you. And and then it just, you know, it just He sat there on the holodeck floor and Torres says, you're dead. There's no stakes there whatsoever. You might as well have had him extreme ironing and the rope snapped or something like that. And they're yeah. just saying, you're dead. There's nothing there whatsoever to keep. In my opinion,
I made the exact same note because I made the same note because it should really end on some kind of like big hook into the episode or big cliffhanger. And in actual fact, it doesn't. It's
no,
kind of like,
it's just,
we're experimenting with going warp 10. Oh, well, we can't. It didn't work. Into the episode. Like, what? You can't. Yeah. I mean,
you guys are silly. Even... That. No. You need that to know what the episode's going to be. Like, the whole point of the beginning scene is to go, this is what this episode's going to be about. Not necessarily have to end on that kind of note. And you need it because in reality, you are going to practice that. You're not going to go immediately into the high stakes. Let's try it for real without any practicing. And so you get this point where they're practicing and it's not going well. And, you know, the frustration, and this is what we're trying to achieve. No, you guys are both wrong.
I disagree. I think,
yeah, to me, there's not, if someone tunes in, if this happens to be, God help them, the first ever episode of Voyager that they see, that to me would just not hook me whatsoever.
Yeah, and it could just be a simple matter of editing it differently. And I mean, yeah, you could call it a cheap trick or whatever, but like, have it be like, oh, wow, I'm hitting warp 10. And then you go into the credits and then you come out of the credits and like, oh, it didn't work. Or, you know, try and do a mislead or do something so that it's like, oh, no, Paris is dying. The shuttle's blowing up. And then you come out of the credits and it's like, it was the holodeck, everyone. But don't just be like, well, we tried this simulation and it didn't work.
Oh, like, my God, that would irritate me so much more if they did that. Ugh.
Well, it's like, it's the equivalent of like having a drama open with like somebody playing a video game, getting beat, it's seeing game over, and then you launch into the credits for your show.
Yeah, anyway. It didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, that's just, it's TV writing 101. You've got to give something to hook the people in, just like you're supposed to end every act break, which used to be for the ads or the commercials, with some kind of hook or some kind of big reveal or whatever. And I don't think the Trek writers are always quite up to that, frankly. But yeah, I mean, on your level, I kind of see what you're saying, Vian, in that we are all TV literate enough that we know they're going to be revisiting this and they will eventually keep trying it until presumably it will work. Otherwise, again, it's quite a dull episode if you just have 45 minutes of them trying and failing. But yeah. It doesn't really give you any hint of like, tune in because this is what might happen if they make it. You know what I mean? It's kind of...
I don't agree. There.
Anyway, but fair enough. You're wrong, but okay.
You're wrong.
Well, I've got backup, so...
Yeah, but your backup is DK, so...
Whoa! So harsh! Jeez! Meow!
I'm now feeling like Harry Kim here.
That's going to be a Vic Reeves handbags at dawn gift situation, right? Anyway, yeah. But no, I mean, in terms of kind of, like you said, just some of the laziness behind the writing, this is another thing that I noted. And again, maybe it's just me being a nerd, but like, Paris hits the warp 10 barrier in the shuttle for the first time. And obviously, he goes off Voyager's scope and they can't possibly keep up because, you know, they can't go warp 10. But then they find him and his explanation is just like, oh, when I turned the engines off, I ended up back where I started. What? How?
I kind of took that as, by that point, it was kind of the power of thought. And I just hand waved it away like that.
I can't hand wave that kind of thing away. I was like, there's no reason why stopping the engines when you've already made that journey would, you know, get you back where you started. You'd be somewhere millions of miles away, and you should really have been aware of this before you did the test, by the way. This was obviously going to always be an issue.
Yeah.
And, so I didn't like that, and I also didn't like the idea of, like, they go to pains to point out how difficult this is, and, you know, Neelix has to do his thing, and, you know, it's kind of nice he gives them the inspiration of, oh, it's, you know, it's doing the typical Trek thing that Futurama makes fun of with, like, ooh, we explain something really complicated with a simple analogy, and then the audience understands, so... I'm sure it isn't quite as simple as, oh, the nacelles aren't being ripped off the ship. The ship's being ripped from the nacelles. Now it all makes sense. It doesn't, but I'll, you know, whatever. We can understand.
I kind of like that because it was as hokey as everything else. And I don't know. I did like the little explanation, you know, we're going to put we're going to have Kim fly it. And it was like, why? And my first thought was, he's expendable. He's Harry Kim.
Yeah, Harry could do it, but yeah, see, I didn't like that either, because again, I'm a stickler for this thing, and I know it's stupid, but like, even if the risk is only 2% and Paris is insisting and whatever, why give him that 2% risk when there's no need? And I don't believe that a good Starfleet captain would do that. They'd be like, well, I'm really sorry, you know, your ego needs you to do it, buddy, but if you die, we're down a helmsman, so I'm not risking it. And like, just like the idea of, you know, off screen, oh, we've got a new form of dilithium that's allowing us to do this that we just found.
Yeah, a lot of it seems just very lazy.
It does feel like
a filler episode, and it does feel like it was intended to be a filler episode. And I know we're still on season two at this point, and they're still trying to give all of the regular cast members something to do. So, you know, Chakotay or Tuvok gets a line here and there, but a lot of it just seems very perfunctory, and that's it. There's nothing really you know, and at times I'm just thinking, you know, just one wrong move and I could check out of this at any moment, you know. Yeah. And then I thought, oh God, here's Kez. There I go.
I was going to say that actually, because I think, to your point, I think the way that they kind of keep all the characters involved, or as many as they can, is kind of good. Like, I like how, obviously, Torres is involved as an engineer. I like how they had that nice moment with Neelix, kind of inadvertently solving the problem. I love the Doctor in this, just for his fantastic, sarcastic humour.
Oh, God.
And he's needed anyway, because, you know.
Picardo is just easily one of the best performances in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, definitely. But to your point, like, Chakotay and Tuvok are sort of perfunctory, you know, they're there, but they're just doing their duty of the week and their jobs and whatever else. Even Kim, I mean, he kind of just disappears from the narrative. They say that on the Delta Flyers podcast as well. Like, Harry is Tom's best friend, but he's going through this horrible thing after he collapses in the mess hall, and it's B'Elanna that comes to visit him, and Harry just doesn't bother. Oh, well, fine, I guess, whatever. And it's like, fair enough, we know now that might have been the start of something between Tom and B'Elanna, because that's where it goes. But I don't believe for one second that they had that in mind when they were writing this episode. It's just a very convenient way to, you know, get the right people involved. Whatever. But speaking of Torres, the other line that I really didn't like, and again, it's just kind of lazy, and to me, I was like, what? Is when she says, like, oh, the shuttle made it, so it's okay, but we didn't know where it was going. But now it's just a simple matter of navigation. And I just made the note, simple? This is pretty bloody important in actual fact. And you're acting like it's just like, oh, yeah, just chuck in one extra screw and we're fine or whatever. And didn't love that. I've mentioned this before. And again, I know it's churlish, but in today's world where we know that, like, your tablet and your iPad can have thousands of gigabytes of data, anytime 90s Star Trek's just like, we've got too much information, so they have, like, 15 pads lined up on a table. I'm just like, this is so ridiculous. But, you know, they can't predict every bit of technology.
No.
I did make the note, Paris, during his kind of evolution thing, ends up with two hearts. He's a Time Lord now. One for the Doctor Who nerds there. And yeah, I just think the whole last 8 minutes is dreadful. The explanation of the evolution, the salamanders, the babies who they just abandoned, by the way. What?
You know who never would have abandoned their babies? Benjamin Lafayette Sisko.
Except he did literally do that at the end of that show.
Hey, that was a different situation.
It really wasn't.
Oh, Mike.
He abandons his existing child and his not-yet-born baby in order to, what, hang out with some non-corporeal beings for a bit? Whatever. But, yeah, I didn't love that either, the fact that Chakotay just chimes in with a log of, like, we've decided to leave the infants where they are. Why? What? Eh? Again, it's just because it's lazy, because you can't have them on the ship and you've written yourself into a corner again. Just like the whole, like, well, we can just de-evolve everyone back when we get to the Alpha Quadrant thing. But, yeah, and I just didn't like the bit at the end, this whole, like, maybe it was me that came onto you, Paris. Maybe it was the woman. Hey, hey, wink, wink. I was like, that is so dodgy. I really hate that. It's completely out of character for Janeway. It's stupid. It's just like, no. Is she flirting or what the heck is that?
I don't know if they kind of wrote it as a sort of hand wave away so that there wouldn't be some kind of weird vibe between them, because obviously it's never really mentioned again. And I think if you were left with the impression that, you know, Paris initiated it, that's really kind of dodgy. He kidnaps her and, well, I mean, essentially rapes
her. Yeah, he did
her.
Still assault her, kidnap her, and subject her to mutation against her will.
Yeah,
so
I'm thinking that line is just there to put, you know, to kind of say, yeah, these people are going to work together, and Paris isn't a complete bastard, so...
I get you, but, yeah. Again, just don't write the crap then, in that case.
No.
But anyway.
It said a lot for me that in the most, I'm guessing, the most exciting part of the episode where he does kidnap her and they're chasing him down, I actually nodded off. So...
That, yeah, that's another thing I resent. I think I've got this. This is more direction than the writing, so excuse me. But I hate the fact that there's a couple of times that there's some great action and it happens off screen. And I'm like, This is the fundamental rule of show, don't tell. You're having it the opposite happen. like Paris explains the whole warp 10 thing, like you said, and it's like, oh, I was everywhere. It was amazing. I saw you. And I was like, it might be nice to see this rather than having to hear it from him.
Yeah.
And then later, as you said, when he kind of breaks into engineering and kidnaps Janeway, you just see some phaser shots coming into the shot of, on the little viewer. And it's like, oh, it's off, happening off screen. Don't worry. Like, why then? Anyway.
Where is the camera there?
It's on the actual monitor, like a modern day laptop with a webcam, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm going to move on from the writing because I can sense Vian is, you know, itching to talk about some other things. So I'm going to jump. I'm going to jump to the acting and quickly get into those things I have to say first. Excuse me. So Robert Duncan McNeil helped refine the episode's conclusion. I helped them rewrite the final scene, he said. Did not feel the original story ended very well. I was pleased because I got to have some input into how to resolve the story. Oh dear, I wouldn't admit to that, Robbie. He was generally puzzled by this episode, so he tried to rationalize it for himself. When you try to tell the story, he breaks warp 10, starts shedding skin, he kidnaps the captain, and then he becomes one with the universe. They are salamanders and have a baby. It sounds ridiculous. Yeah. What is this about? Before you can even start to tell the story, you have to find the moral. What is the simplest point of the episode? Once you can say that in a sentence, then that's what the episode is about. To me, the whole warp 10 and salamanders and all of that frosting was about Paris trying to find some sort of salvation outside himself and ultimately realizing he had to find his own self-worth from within. Here's somebody who thinks he's got to break warp 10 and prove to everybody, his father and himself, that he can do this outside thing, but ultimately your happiness comes from within. In the end, McNeil still thought the episode was very strange. That was a bizarre show, he exclaimed. It really was. Despite his mixed feelings about the story, McNeil extremely liked appearing in this installment. He described it as an episode I really enjoyed, and moments later said, I loved getting the opportunity to chew the scenery a little bit. He also stated that while he knows that fans hate the episode, he loved it, that he always enjoyed being able to put on prosthetics. Ultimately, he felt that while turning into a lizard, then kidnapping Janeway and having lizard babies might not have been the best story to tell. The things he got to do in the story were really fun for him. At the 2009 New Jersey Star Trek convention, Kate Mulgrew remarked that Threshold was the episode of Voyager she was most uncomfortable with. No shit. Noting that she didn't like the thought of mating with Paris as a lizard.
I think Robbie hit a home run with this episode because it would have been very easy to go over the top with it, to go camp with it, and to hit that middle ground where it still felt like it was coming from a place that is real, I think is really a difficult task that was assigned to him, and I think he did it.
What about you, Diki? Any thoughts on Robbie's performance that we haven't kind of talked about yet?
I thought Picardo was great. He was one of the two, and the other was Robbie McNeil.
Yeah, fair enough.
He did try his best to sell what is essentially a wet rag of a script.
Yeah, definitely. I did notice he changes the pronunciation of nacelles, which is weird depending on who he's talking to. I know that's, you know, apropos of nothing, but it was just like, huh. He says nacelles all the time in the early simulations, and then when everybody else is in the mess hall saying nacelles, he corrects it back to nacelles again.
So. Maybe he just thought he was, you know, everybody else is saying it this way. Maybe I'm being stupid. I'll fit in.
Yeah, I'll follow them anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've just got a list of, like, the scenes, really, but, yeah, I think he's great. The scene where, even though I don't necessarily agree with it, the scene where he kind of argues the case to Janeway and, you know, 2%'s nothing, I've got to do this, this is why. I actually think that scene's really well acted and kind of well written, as much as, like I said, I don't agree with the outcome. I can still accept it.
I do think, as a overall, Voyager's cast in general, aside from Picardo, really, and Kate Mulgrew, they tend to be overlooked in terms of their ability, but I think that Voyager actually has one of the strongest main casts in that everybody on it are really equally good performers, whereas you have something like Deep Space Nine or the original series or some of the newer stuff where you have some standouts and some real clunkers for actors. Now, I won't name names, but, you know, if you go back and... Well, you want me to name names? Because I can. But if you go back and watch, you know, Deep Space Nine, you know, you have Armin Shimerman, who is elevating every single scene he's in because he is so amazing. And then you have some other actors on that show where you're like, what are you doing? Like, you come to Voyager, and this is just a good Threshold's sort of a microcosm of this experience, or this observation, I should say, is that you have eight or nine actors who are really of the same caliber of performer, where you don't have one who's like noticeably so much better than everybody else, or so much worse than everybody else.
You have seven great performers plus Jennifer Lean and Robert Beltran, but you know.
Yeah, I was trying to be gentle on poor Jennifer, because I mean, look, she didn't have much to work with. I mean, realistically.
I really resented that when I was talking about like they kind of used all the characters well. I kind of hated the fact that they still fell back to that old trope of like, Anne Paris hits on Cass. Because that's all she's there for. It's like, oh, good God, stop it with this. She's a capable woman and an actual, you know, a nurse that's trained and knows her stuff, and all he's there for, all he does to her in that moment is, oh, kiss me, go on. Hated it. Hated it with a passion. But yeah, anyway. But no, I love that scene with Janeway, and I really do love all the stuff when he starts kind of breaking down, literally and physically and mentally, on the kind of bio bed, when kind of, I think you were mentioning it, Vianne, when he's like, I used to always cry and I was so alone and my dad used to say it was a sign of weakness, and he's kind of really opening up. And as you say, Robbie is not being cheesy with it. He's really selling it. And even though what you're looking at is ridiculous pseudo, you know, the fly nonsense, he's really selling it. And you feel that emotion. And I did at the end as well, when he kind of comes to the realization, you know, that, even though I've done it, I don't really feel any different. It's the validation isn't going to come from these outside things. It was a really cool lesson to learn. And so, like you said, I don't think the episode is able to be written off as like the whole thing is, you know, turd top to bottom, but it's just the main plot. So, yeah. Shall we move to the direction then for what little we have?
Yeah.
I don't have anything to read out from this, just like anyone, any notes that we have. So did either of you want to jump in with any thoughts that you had on the overall direction?
I think the direction obviously could have been better, but I think when it comes to, you know, the makeup effects, you know, which I believe are a direct result of the directing, I think they did a really interesting job. And I think they did a good job of balancing the absurdity with the dramatic. And but I think if we look at it from a 1980s kind of horror perspective, it's an interesting direction to go. And I think they could have actually gone further in that direction if they wanted to. But again, it's not the worst. It's not the best. It's just filler, really.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, the director of this, I should have said, is Alexander Singer. And I just think it's not bad, but it's very standard. It's just your standard kind of talking heads.
Yeah.
Nothing particularly standing out. Obviously, I didn't like a lot of stuff happening off screen, and other than that, like, just I hated the cliche. As much as I said I liked that plot, the cliche idea that like you have to show Jonas in the background looking shady to kind of sell to the audience that something's going on, when you have a scene later where he literally contacts the Kazon anyway, I was like, did we need this directed like this, you know, where he's all but like rubbing his hands together in the background going, ha ha ha, I am the villain, you know, kind of thing. But anyway, that's really all I have. Just like I said, it's very standard, very, some things happen too quick, some off screen. And I like the colorful stars when they go to Transwarp. That's really all I have to say about that. Well, that was quick. Shall we move to the next section? we may as well. We'll go to what I've got, VFX and production design. And I do have some things to read out here, so please bear with me. I'm so sorry about this. So yeah, I'll start by saying, on each of the days in which McNeil played the mutated Paris, it took more than 5 hours for the foam latex prosthetics to be applied to McNeil. Removing the makeup was a much easier affair, however, as unlike the alien-looking regulars of the series, McNeil could simply rip off his prosthetics since they weren't required for reuse. To create the amphibious hyper-evolved humans that Paris and Janeway mutate into, at least one full-size model was made of each of the two versions of the creatures, and the newborn versions were additionally visualized using CGI. The amphibians were modeled on real water-faring animals, so the newborn versions would look appropriate when they enter water. Visual effects producer Dan Curry explained, "We had a scene where the babies were jumping in the water, and what we did there so we could have the water interact properly with the creature is I designed the creature like a baby seal and a reptile." Yay. So yeah, anything you wanted to mention about the VFX and production design then, just quickly?
Does that include the makeup? Because the makeup was great.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've already said my thoughts on that. I love the makeup up to the very sort of final evolved stage where it gets very Alien of the Weekish. But yeah, I mean, stuff leading up to that. Very
like good. The part where he rips his tongue out, I think was actually really disgusting and well done.
Yeah, I quite liked it. Unlike you, I even liked the final kind of form before he became full lizard. I think it looked...
You're going to go looking for an action figure of it on eBay, apparently.
No, they used to have one in the shop. I won't go that far. I just want the salamander itself. I think it looked quite good. I mean, yes, it is very much Alien of the Week, but considering the short amount of screen time it had, I think they put a lot of effort into it. So, I was quite impressed with that.
Okay, fair enough. I don't really have much to add. I said I've kind of given my thoughts on that. I don't like the way that the babies look. I think it's quite obviously dodgy CGI. No offense to Dan Curry and co. I just don't think it really works. But that's possibly my projecting that I just don't like that plot idea. And the only other note I have is I like the cool shuttle launch from Voyager. I think this is the first time we'd actually seen the way that they launch out of the back, and that's the way the shuttle bay is. I only made a note of that because Garrett Wong said he didn't like it on the podcast. He was like, it looks like Voyager's pooping something out of its arse. That's where the shuttle bay is.
Well, in fairness, when it's talking about this episode, it's not entirely wider than that.
I suppose, yeah. Cool. I literally have one line for music and sound. It's fine, and I like the standard triumphant music. That's it. Anything from you guys that you wanted to add?
I think it's fine covers it.
Yeah.
It's pretty standard.
Yeah. Fair enough. Can't put it off any longer then. I did promise that I would regale the audience and you guys here with the limerick that I've written to describe the plot of Threshold such as it is. And so without any further ado, here it goes. My limerick for Threshold. Approach warp 10 with trepidation. There's a danger in infinite acceleration. Evolution goes crazy. Tom and Janeway have babies after one truly weird-ass mutation. There we go. Hopefully you all enjoyed that. And if not, apologies. I mean, we've been here a while, so I'll just move us to the audience response then. Because these are kind of clunky episodes, shall we say, I'm also going to throw in a little bit of critic response on this one, partly because we didn't get a lot of audience response and partly because it's fairly... As Vian said, I think there's a little bit of potential bandwagoning, so I wanted to see what the critics thought and if that's where this came from.
Incoming transmission.
So, I'll start by saying that Cine Fantastique rated this episode 1 out of 4 stars. Star Trek magazine also scored this 1 out of 5 stars, defined as total gach. The unauthorized reference book Delta Quadrant gave this installment a rating of 4 out of 10. And the book Star Trek 101 by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block cites this episode as the Star Trek Voyager winner of the Spock's Brain Award, I was right, and states that of the entire Voyager series, this installment is the one, quote, most likely to give Darwin a migraine. In 2015, Threshold was included in Geek.com's 35 Greatest Moments in Star Trek, however, they ranked Tom Paris hitting Warp 10 as the 30th greatest moment in all Star Trek. In 2018, Comic Book Resources included the episode in a list of Trek episodes that are so bad they must be seen. Ah, Vian, someone after your own heart. In 2012, Den of Geek listed this as the worst episode of Star Trek Voyager. Fox ranked this episode as the fourth.
Oh, come off it.
God.
And I was waiting for that. And Fox ranked this episode as the fourth worst episode of all Star Trek up to 2018.
No, no way. No.
Den of Geek included this episode on a binge watching guide that included a roadmap of episodes that, although not typically achieving high ratings, were still entertaining. Did you write that? Yeah. In 2017, Screen Rant ranked this episode the 5th worst episode of the Star Trek franchise. In July 2019, they again ranked Threshold as one of the top 5 worst of the series, although they felt there was a good start to the episode. The following year, they ranked it the 2nd worst episode of the series, noting an IMDb rating of 5.3 out of 10. They elaborate, it barely gets off the ground from there before it crashes and burns into some kind of drunken daydream. So... that was what the critics thought. But what about you? We have our usual audience stuff as well, since we have opened the subspace communications. I don't have a lot about Threshold, because like I said, I didn't get a lot of people responding. It's all from Facebook and it's from just various groups. So first of all, from Red Shirts and Runabouts, Ryan Levinger said, it has a well-deserved bad reputation, LOL. The main catalyst for the Warp 10 is a new kind of dilithium. I don't recall them making extensive modifications to the shuttle, but it seems like that would actually be the main component. The lizard thing was really weird, and then the fact that he kidnapped Janeway and they had lizard babies was just... yeah. It wasn't a good episode, LOL. That's okay, too. Not every episode has to be good or defended, and I feel like the actors and producers are sometimes able to admit and even laugh about how some episodes just weren't good or didn't work out. From Star Trek Forever group, Michael Joyce says, 0 stars, but I would like to have seen the Offspring evolve and come after Voyager. It would be better than Fury, which furthered an already ruined Kes. Okay, fair enough. Jeffrey Roddy, the episode where Paris fired his photon torpedoes into Janeway's landing bay, the only crew member on Voyager to breach the captain's shield. What? Thanks for that, Jeffrey. Sarah Pugh weirdly just put a heart and loves the episode. So there we go. And from Star Trek fans UK and Ireland, Darren McLean says, 5 out of 5. It's a good episode and it never deserved the hate it got. Damian McElvogue says, I remember watching this episode when I was a kid and thinking it was a cool episode. Still, I think it's not as bad as other episodes. And Dan Vine says, here's my opinion on Threshold and Spock's brain. They're a lot of fun, aren't they? Hear me out. The first time you watch them, you think it's the worst Star Trek I've ever seen. Then the second time you watch them, you go into it knowing it's stupid and have the most fun. Because you know it's silly. It makes no sense. You know it's like an old sci-fi B-movie. You know it's daft, but you can really enjoy 45 minutes of camp silly laughs. So long as you don't take it seriously or expect to, it's actually a really good laugh. And that's it. I don't agree on this episode, actually. I think it's not even got that kind of camp factor to be... You can just laugh at it because there's some good stuff in here, you know. It's not Spock's brain, but that way. Yeah. Any thoughts on that, guys? Anything surprise you or?
I'm always surprised by the amount of vitriol this episode gets. I know I've said this already, but I just don't think it's that bad comparatively. I think it's just a perfectly serviceable filler episode.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'll, you know, make my feelings clearer in my conclusion and kind of codify how I feel about it and why for the audience, if not anyone else. I think we've covered it quite heavily. So all that's left to do is to kind of finish up with our favorite things and then our conclusions.
Spark analysis.
So we'll start with our favorite character moment and line, as we always do. And again, we always go to the guest first. So, Vianne, who was your favorite character in this and why?
My favorite character, I guess, is got to be Paris. It's his story. And I think Robbie and the writing really got some poignant moments in an otherwise kind of ridiculous plot, particularly where Paris thinks he's dying and he's reflecting on his past and having his private thoughts out loud.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. DK, what about you? Who was your favorite character and why?
I'm going to go with the Doc.
Fair enough. You want to get into why or just obvious?
You've already mentioned it. He's just fantastically sarcastic in this episode.
Fair enough. I also sided with Vianne. I went with Paris because I actually do like his arc in this episode, you know, without flogging the dead horse. I think it's really interesting. It's just a shame what it's kind of hanging on. What was your favorite moment or scene, sorry, in the episode, Vianne, and why?
God, I'm pretty sure this is from Threshold, and if it's not, I'm going to be really embarrassed. But where the doctor slaps him awake?
He doesn't, but it's my favorite moment, so I'll jump into it. It's played for comedy, and he doesn't slap him, but it's just really funny because...
Oh, wait, he goes, pick up, Lieutenant!
Yeah, that's the one.
That was it.
Yeah,
that's my favorite line. I'll get that out of the way now.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, I do love the way Janeway says, like, can we wake him? And he says, I don't see why not. You're expecting a hyperspray or something. And he just leans over and screams, wake up, Lieutenant! And because it's part of the same scene, I also have it in my favorite moment that later on when Paris has explained this kind of 2001 metaphysical journey he's been on of seeing everything, the doctor just goes, well, I'm glad you had a good time. Which I think is just the understatement of the century. I love it. So, yeah, we've had your favorite line then, DK. Do you want to share it with us again?
You just said it, mate. Don't.
Yeah. just wake up lieutenant, I suppose, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Vianne, do you have a favorite line that we haven't spoiled?
That's honestly, that's probably my favorite line and my favorite moment. It's just so epic. I'm not epic, but it's just classic Doctor.
Yeah, fair enough. I went a little bit too serious and solemn with it, and my favorite line is, this is the first time in 10 years I feel I have a life to risk. Because, like I say, I was taking a lot of convincing that you would let Paris, you know, do the mission with even a 2% risk, and I was like, oh, I appreciated that line. It kind of put a lot into place. So, right. All that's left then is for us to give our conclusion and our score out of 5 Starfleet Deltas. We're sticking with Deltas, even though I could have used something else for bad episodes, but we'll not get into that. So, yeah. Again, Vianne, you're the guest. I'm going to come to you first. What's your conclusion and your score out of 5, please?
Well, I was going to give it a 2.5, but I'm going to be generous and say 3 now just to compensate for all the reviews, which I really do believe there's a lot of bandwagoning here. I think it became fun and popular to rag on this episode, and everybody's like, oh yeah, that was terrible. And it's really not that bad. And there's some really good payoffs to it, particularly with Paris's overall story arc for the whole series and how he goes from this, you know, bad boy to we start getting into what really makes him tick and why he has been the way he is and what he wants and what his goals and aspirations are and what his hangups are. And I think this is one of the first times you really, really get into that. And so I think it's important in that sense. But overall, I don't think it deserves all the hate it gets. And I think, no, it's not Star Trek's best, but it's not its worst. And I think, as I said already, it's a very serviceable filler episode. Back when we were doing 22 to 24 episodes per season and not doing, how do I want to say that? You know, the overall story arcs over an entire season where you had these individual episodes, more episodic storytelling, right? And so, yeah, not everything's going to be a home run, but, you know, you can still get to a second base, you know? So, you know, I think three stars out of 5 or 3 deltas out of 5, because I think it's fine, ultimately. It's fine.
That's fair enough. I can't really disagree with anything or argue with anything there. GK, then over to you. What's your conclusion and score?
There's some decent performances here, but it's hung on a framework of such shoddy pantomime level nonsense that to me, it kind of makes Bryder Chaotica look po-faced. I can only imagine how hungover Braga was while writing this. It's mildly entertaining, but I just can't take it seriously. It's not a complete car crash, but the driver has certainly nodded off and is rapidly veering towards a ditch. And I'm going to give it 2 out of 5.
So 3 and 2. I think I kind of put a lot of my thoughts into the conclusion to explain where I was coming from. So that's probably why it's a bit long. Apologies. I know I often say that, but just bear with me. So I said on the Delta Flyers podcast, Robert Duncan McNeil says he thinks this episode wouldn't be as hated if you just remove the lizard babies. While I don't entirely agree, I see where he's coming from. Paris's emotional arc in the episode is actually really good and very well acted. I can even forgive some of the early mutation stuff, knowing a little bit more about what the writers and the actor were going for. But for me, it's the whole last 7 or 8 minutes that ruin the episode. And unfortunately, they're what the whole thing hinges on, since they give the explanation for everything and the resolution. I hate everything there, starting with the idea of a cyclical evolution. I know it's science fiction, but it's not fantasy. And Star Trek has frequently prided itself on scientific accuracy. This idea is just dumb. I never like it when crew members end up monstrously or weirdly transformed. It just never works for me and represents the worst, most hokey aspects of sci-fi. Sadly, I have even more to criticize. The episode frequently not showing events that happen off screen and are implied or described breaks a fundamental rule of visual media and just comes off cheap and unsatisfying. The tone is also pretty inconsistent, although I do enjoy a good chunk of the comedy moments that provide levity that isn't linked to the main story. Overall, I would say that the episode wasn't quite as bad as I remembered. Worth another look for McNeil's performance and Paris's emotional, though not physical, journey and transformation. Ultimately, though, with just this, a few nice visuals and some unconnected funny bits to praise, the episode is still a misfire. The whole structure collapses under that awful ending, and ultimately, we've seen much better catalysts for character growth. Not a truly vomit-inducing stinker, but definitely a powerful bad smell. And I gave it 1.5 or 1.5 out of 5. So, yeah. So what we'll do is our usual adding all three of those together and dividing by the three of us here to give our final score. The final score for Threshold then is 2.1 out of 5. So, yeah. That's probably one of our worst, if not the worst, score we've had. So we started well with this season of clunky apps, shall we say. And believe it or not, there's more to come in future. So anyway, so do you have anywhere where the people can find you on the internet that you wanted to shout out or not?
Yeah, you can find me on most platforms at Lady VM. That's VEAN.
Yeah, you can always find myself or the podcasts are all over social media. Although I'm thinking of ditching one of them, I'll let you guess which. But there will be a banner on screen if you're watching on YouTube to visit any of the places that you can find us. It's always written there. You can always pause, take a screenshot and find them. But if you're not watching and you're listening to this on podcast platforms, etc., there is also a link tree always in the episode descriptions on both YouTube and the audio areas. Follow that link tree, and again, you can find all of our social medias. You can leave us information there. Do please get involved. We are struggling for audience feedback for these episodes, and I kind of did want to, you know, get a little bit of a more gauge from the fans of if they really are, you know, as bad as their reputation suggests, or if some people like them or whatever. So do interact if you happen to see me prompt you to ask these things, and feel free to defend the episode in comments or on social media, or agree with us or anything else. Let's just have a chat and talk all things Star Trek, because that's always fun. So yeah, we are going to drop out of Warp 10, hopefully without having mutated into something hideous for now. And we will be back though next week, where we're continuing this series of looking at unloved episodes or infamous episodes or episodes that are memes, where we're heading to Next Generation and dealing with what seems like a very Anne Rice inspired sex ghost candle situation.
Oh,
and if you know,
snap.
You know what we're dealing with. So yeah, do tune in for that one. And in the meantime, remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material by DK. Please remember to like this episode and spread it throughout subspace. Subscribe to the Hit or Miss YouTube channel and follow us online. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the link tree listed in the episode's description. For any queries or to apply to be a guest on the show, you can also email homstartrek@gmail.com. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcasts Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Mike's Podcasts. Hit or Miss Podcast was based on an idea by Michael Wilson and Will Templer. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll be back, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
I'm gonna warp out of here at once, maximum speed.